G'day.
Off to a cracking start.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So welcome. I guess I'm Mark, and I'm going to be co-hosting with Vince and James yet another unnamed F1 podcast.
TBD.
TBD, exactly. Three of us have decided that it's time to foray into what would be our version of what happened this weekend in Formula One. So, I'm going to hand over to you and Vince. Vince, do you want to start off and introduce yourself?
Sure, yeah. As aforementioned, I am Vince. I don't know what other information is even relevant. I do enjoy the Formula One. I guess that's relevant, right?
Very.
Probably.
And the handball, Goss, and we can start talking about who we are in more detail, what teams you follow, and we'll go from there. James?
Yes, I'm James. I've been watching Formula One since I was a little baby boy. My dad introduced me to it, and I figured I'd jump at the chance to yap a bit about it. Why not?
Yep. So the three of us have been talking on and off about Formula One since we started, and we're working together. That's about 7 years ago is roughly what I'm guessing it'll be close to in various forms. As James said, he's a Formula One supporter from a long time. Me, same story. I was about 12 when I first watched a race in 92. It was very exciting. It was
Yes, the year I was born.
There you go, James. I was let a few things slide there. I'm a sad Ferrari supporter.
The pain,
the absolute pain, and the absolute joy all at once.
Enjoys wearing his clown nose all the time.
So yes, I enjoyed watching Schumacher win lots and lots and lots of races for a long period of time, and every time somebody in a red car goes fast and doesn't crash in the rain, I'm fairly happy.
Didn't do too bad this weekend, to be fair.
Yeah, could
have gone a lot worse.
Could have gone a lot worse. We won't worry about how much better they could have gone.
If only the strategy wasn't terrible, but you know.
Classic Ferrari things.
So
I think I was just going to say I could make lots of excuses about how, you know, I've always been interested in cars, and I remember, you know, playing OG like Formula One simulator games and stuff like that with my dad on like a little racing sim and stuff like that. But ultimately, I can't get away from my shame of being one of the first of the Drive to Survive generation of Formula One watchers. I literally never sat down and watched a race until 2020.
Wow.
So there you go.
Yeah, he's one of those people.
Yeah.
There we go. He did participate in conversations around Formula One a lot.
He did.
Yes.
And you can't argue with the success that Drive to Survive has provided Formula One. Like, the size of the sport now, I think they said 467,000 people at the Grand Prix over the weekend in Australia, which is absolutely bonkers. Yep. I think they said also Public Transport Victoria put on an extra 5,000 tram services over the weekends.
That's a cool stuff.
Bonkers.
5,000. That's
5,000 additional trams.
Okay.
Or like routes or services. Whatever you want to call it. I'm digging myself a hole.
We'll add a fact check section to this podcast.
you want a Twitter for, like, community verification thing after every stat we mention?
Yeah. Just make it up. No one will know.
Damn, I can't just pull my stats randomly off Reddit.
See, I did, but I also then fact-checked them.
Yeah, well, that's more due diligence than I'm willing to put into these things.
we'll just, we're not a trustworthy news source. We just say what we want to say and carry on.
Yeah, I will say, the F1 movie trailer came out, what is it, like last week or whatever it was?
Thursday or Friday.
It
certainly a bit more interesting than I thought it was going to look.
It looks really visually good. It might be a terrible movie, but it looks like it's going to be great to watch, you know?
Yeah, the amount of effort they put in with getting some actual cars on the grid last year, I think at like Silverstone and a couple other tracks, as well as, you know, some onboard footage from other F1 cars while they go around tracks is, yeah, paying off.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely looks spicy, so looking forward to it.
I don't think it would have been made, you know, like a $300 million Formula One movie without Drive to Survive.
No.
I mean, there have been quite a few poor attempts at making a Formula One movie before, haven't there?
Well, there was Rush, which is a really good movie, which is...
I did like Rush.
Chris Hemsworth and some other people. I don't know of any others, though.
I think Rush was probably the best one. There was one with Sylvester Stallone in it as well, wasn't there?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Like, ages ago. Yeah, I remember what you talked about.
Yeah. So.
Yo, Schumacher.
Anything with James Hunt in it is going to be good, right? And they did it really well. So. But generally, Formula One movies have been atrocious. I'm going to find the detail on this... Sylvester Stallone F1 movie.
It sounds like it would be one of those movies that you would like hate watch. You would watch it just to see how bad it is.
It was F1's version of The Room.
It was called Driven.
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 What
I
a name.
I recognize that. I feel like I've heard that before.
Oh, sorry. It wasn't F1. It was a kart. Yeah, it's a karting movie.
Isn't there a really big crash, but it looks really silly or something like that in that movie?
I can't remember it. I'm not going to go through and put my life on hold to see every bad Formula One or motorsport
Why
movie.
Not?
Are you a real Formula One fan if you haven't gone
where's
out?
Where's your
and...
dedication?
not for the second time. It's gonna be edgy. I always I'm trying to remember now that without any preparation for this, but there was a Ferrari just a move like a five minute movie where the guy's driving down the streets, a French cut. It was amazing. I'll find that and share it. It's one of those amazing videos if you haven't seen it. Anyways, should we get cracking onto the Grand Prix that just was and not talk about 5,000 additional tram services?
Yes.
I guess we could.
Yeah. In the interests of time.
True.
So,
yeah. Good podcast is what? 40 minutes?
I think so. 40 minutes.
We could vastly exceed that very quickly, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
Well, we're trying to do the whole weekend breakdown in that period of time, so which is always exciting. So I guess the first thing was there was a new track layout, slightly modified.
Yes, I was actually quite excited about this, and I completely forgot about it during the race, but they have widened a bunch of the corners, basically all of them, and they basically straightened out 9 and 10, so it's not really a corner anymore. So the lap's shorter and much faster the whole way around, basically.
More DRS zones. Woo!
So everyone wants DRS. Though it wasn't really on at the start, was it?
No. Well, that's the cool thing, right? Because the Melbourne GP is always a good race, but this one was, like, great. And couldn't tell you if it was the rain or just the track layout changes. Probably both.
Probably the rain, to be fair.
It's
mostly
it's probably
the rain.
Guaranteed the rain.
We did see a couple of decent overtakes because of the straightened out rear section, but for the most part, I'm going to call that on the rain. And five rookies in the field, which is always going to be spicy.
Yeah, that helped.
I think if we were to look at the race as a whole, and we can get to the race in a minute, I saw some rumors of it being a race that had everything and yet nothing at all. If it wasn't for the rain. That's how it was, you know, it's been described.
I can kind of see that argument.
Anyways, are we going through this in some kind of order? Are we going to go and...
I mean, may as well go chronologically, right?
Let's do it.
FP1, 2, 3, quality race.
Yeah. James, you want to talk about your highlights and FP1?
I mean, I feel like the bait right there is the Bambin crash, right? Poor dude got a couple laps in on a flyer and then just loses it. And, yeah, pretty much wipes out the car for the rest of the day. Yeah, he did not have a good weekend at all. He really didn't.
Beaching it in FP3.
Yep. And then, funnily enough, survived the race.
One of the few... can we really still call him a rookie?
Yeah.
He still counts. Technically, according to Formula One, there is 6 rookies in the field this season because they're including Lawson in that. I don't really include Lawson in that. I consider it 5. The others have at least had, like, 1 or 2 races at most. Maybe, I think Behrman had 3 before the start of the season. I wouldn't count that as enough experience, especially considering it wasn't in a Haas for most of it.
True that.
Based on that, Hamilton's also a rookie, right?
I'd say a few world championships would kind of exclude that classification.
Well, let's put Sainz in that category then.
Yeah, I'm sure we can talk about that later. But they were looking good in first practice. Both him and Albon were putting in some smashing laps.
Yeah, Williams is looking
obviously,
good.
Obviously, free practice is never a true indication of skill because you don't know what kind of race preparation stuff they're running, long runs, short runs, testing, or anything like that. But you know, the Williams still did put on a decent show.
Yeah, I had signs roughly kind of 5th, 6th-ish overall from the practice results, which, yeah, you obviously take as a big with a big grain of salt. But I don't think there was that much sandbagging going on that we could discount it. I reckon that, especially given the results, there's a lot of potential in that Williams, which is very, very exciting.
I don't think there was any, apart from possibly McLaren, who kind of showed their hand even through testing, there was no sandbagging.
No.
Oh, I feel, well, that obviously, again, depending on what program Lando was running in FP3, he certainly didn't turn up for FP3. I think he ended up, what, like 10th in FP3?
Yes.
Yeah, so I feel like either he was sandbagging a little bit or he was doing some long run testing and stuff like that.
Yeah. You could see there was pace in the car. You could, like,
absolutely.
There was no question. There was pace in the car. Even right through testing, you could. Everybody was confident over there, quietly confident. So, I don't think the car was on edge when they put in FP1 fastest times. So, that's
not at all.
You know,
not even close.
Mercedes was basically probably the least of the picks that I would have had. So George. You know, doing even in, what's it called, in FP1, the way he put the car, I think it was a 7th or what it was, that was pretty decent. So I didn't rate them as much as I thought they would. They performed better. They've outdone my expectations over there.
I think so as well. That's maybe probably the one team that actually did some proper sandbagging. I don't think anyone ever believed that the Red Bull were going to struggle. But Merck was a bit of a question mark, I think, after
Max
how up
struggle.
And down they've been. Yeah, correct, yeah, Max. No one believed Max was going to struggle. Yeah, that's a better way to put it. So, yeah, it was nice to see the Mercs get up there. Because they were fairly middling through free practice.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, the telling thing on that first practice was Piastri's 1:17.6 with medium tires. Everybody else was pushing 17.2s and 4s on softs. So, you know, they're different. They're just running different. So
yeah.
Well, I mean, we can also sort of chat about how everyone was doing throughout free practice. But when it came to the race, it meant jack shit.
Yep.
Melbourne did Melbourne things and just decided to buck it down for the day, which was glorious to see. I always love a good wet race. I feel like a good 75% of the races throughout the year, they're always like, oh, there's a chance of rain, there's a chance of rain, and it never happens. But when it's Melbourne and they said, it's definitely going to rain tomorrow, and it did.
Yeah, the rain was a great equalizer, but it had no real impact on the first two guys out there. Their car was just on rails.
It wasn't until it wasn't. That's for sure. That's the thing. Even all things like that, when it sort of dried out just a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. But you know, they were still, they just got caught out, and it could happen to anyone at 100%. Any point, right? I actually don't get that, right? If you listen to the commentary, it's like, oh, they're first on scene. Like, they've been racing. This field is spread all over the track. They're not first on scene. It could be anyone, anywhere.
Not necessarily first on scene, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, they have the first right to potentially react, but not necessarily either. So
I will say it was painful watching Piastri get himself beached and just watching him slowly spin his way down. I guess technically in that case they were first on scene, weren't they? Because it was were they behind the safety car not long beforehand, or am I getting my times in the race mixed up?
I feel like they only got, I didn't write it down, like 5 racing laps
something like that.
Before the second lot of rain.
They were still pretty close up, because that's why Piastri fell so far down the order when he did go off track.
Well, he did get, like, pretty much beached, right? He had to back himself off the grass and turn 13. So, lost a lot of time. Lando, on the other hand, didn't lose as much time. I do feel for Piastri. So, but
being
let's...
home race and everything.
Yeah, let's go through it in order. I guess first guy, Hajar, basically spinning on the formation lap.
That was another heartbreaker. Watching here, seeing him just drop it, just like anyone else could. And we've seen multiple times when the races are wet from rookies and from experienced drivers. And yeah, seeing him on the side of the track, head down, hands in his helmet, just heartbreaking to watch for the poor dude.
It was nice to see Anthony Hamilton there. Go and give him a big hug and console him.
Oh, he needed it, for sure.
Yeah.
And Anthony Hamilton has got a lot of experience giving it at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult when it's your first race and that happens. I think it happened to Max. I can't remember the race, but the guys at Red Bull redid the front end in about 20 minutes.
It was Hungary 2020 or 2021, I think. It was one of those 2 years. It was in Hungary, I remember. The Red Bull mechanics did a miracle job getting his car ready for that race.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Pity those same mechanics weren't there to do much, but I mean, he was beached.
I mean, unfortunately, if he'd gone in nose first, he probably possibly could have recovered that and been racing. But unfortunately, he went rear end first and just ripped that rear wing off the car.
Yeah.
There's no quick change on the rear wing, unfortunately.
Yeah. So that delayed the start for 15 minutes. So, and, you know, built more anxiety and cold tires.
And drier track.
Of course, a little bit, not much.
Slightly.
Yeah. But would they have started without the safety car? If that initial formation lap incident didn't happen?
I don't think so.
Do you think it would have made a difference?
It wasn't it wasn't actively raining at the time. So typically they don't start under the safety car unless it's actively raining. Like in Spa those years ago, we all love remembering that shit show. It was enough of a standing water that the cars were perfectly fine getting rid of it. So I think they would have gone racing anyway.
Okay. Yeah. And so what happened then?
The one thing that really, really impressed me, like struck me when I watched a replay of it today, was just how much control Max had off the start.
Oh, he had a cracker of a start.
I literally don't think you could drive more perfectly than he drove off the starting line.
Definitely not. That thing felt like a rocket ship and put Lando on the back foot nearly straight away. Got Piastri, and then didn't get much time to do anything after that.
No, he was just kind of stuck.
Yep. But I think, if I remember correctly, it was Jack Doohan, a couple corners later, under the incredibly unfair amount of pressure that poor kid's under, and he also drops it as well under acceleration.
Yeah, let's not talk about Jack Doohan and pressure. That's an episode by itself.
I mean, probably. He's handling it way better than I think most people would. It seems like his dad has brought him up with the right sort of mindset. Obviously, Jack Doohan's dad, a well-known, I think he was a MotoGP racer.
Yeah,
before it was MotoGP, which is...
Yeah, exactly. So we're way back in the day, but he's got that right mentality of handling the pressure, but it is a bit unfair to see how much of it he's getting.
Yeah.
When your team photo has four drivers in it rather than just the two drivers, that's sending a message.
Yeah, I mean...
I was just going to say, when you look at some of the other drivers that spun out here, especially Alonso and Sainz, who have the experience... it's probably a big confidence hit for him and especially for Hajar, but I don't think he could hold it against them. Or, you know, you would turn around to them and say, if you were talking, standing in front of them, talking to them about it, you'd just turn around and say, look, it's just these conditions. You can't predict all futures. You can drive to the best of your ability, but when it's that, I guess, oily, even Sainz's spin later, I think it was just later the same lap.
It was under the safety car.
Yeah. He was going really slowly, was basically giving it no throttle, and had the exact same thing basically where the rear just went. And you'd be pointing straight to that and going, you know, don't hold it against yourself. You have to just try and take it in stride and remember that it's not necessarily a black mark against you or your driving ability. It's the conditions. It's your experience.
In the harsh world of Formula One, it still will be, unfortunately. Not as much as it possibly could have been in the dry, but it's still like, you know, these are the best of the best. They should be able to drive under these conditions, and some of them have shown us that they're not necessarily the best in these conditions. What that comes down to, I mean, it could be that they just don't get the opportunity to drive in the rain very much in these cars. You know, considering how much water those tires move, there's a sweet spot of rain where they'll actually race and get that experience. Obviously it being the first race for five of these drivers in the rain, talk about a trial by fire.
Yeah, they'd have, 2 hours of practice total from the 2 days prior in very hot conditions and then go straight into the opposite.
Yeah. One formation lap, drive out, and then get started.
Yeah. In some cases, one corner.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Exactly. No, this is the thing. It's an absolute challenge. And the biggest part of it all is them having to get back on at the end of this week in China, right? There's not a lot of recovery time. The mindset needs to just reset and go again, and have complete faith in your ability and know that this is, you know, tricky conditions, one-off, let's not worry about it. It's happened to somebody with as many years. And speaking of Sainz, they said it was just power delivery. You know, something under safety car power delivery for Sainz. I'm like, you know, as much experience as you have.
I believe he called it a torque surge, I think was his wording for it.
Yeah.
Sure.
But, like, yeah, you're not wrong. The crashes themselves may not be the true reflection on the drivers. It's going to be how they recover from having what for some was a disastrous weekend. I mean, I can't say that Liam Lawson or Gabriel Bortoleto's weekends were any better. Lawson certainly wasn't, but that's a whole topic on its own. It's how these drivers are going to, like you said, recover from this.
Yeah.
Show us what they've got. Reset.
Yeah. Kimi Antonelli, though. He was a lot of luck. A lot of luck there.
A lot of luck, but that's what this sport is as well. And you can make yourself, you can make your own luck a lot of the time in this sport as well.
Yeah, I think
you can.
People
timing
point...
Was...
Go, Mark.
Go in. No, you go.
I was going to say, people point to luck a lot. And I have this idea in my head that it really, when you point to luck in Formula One, it's really luck plus you've got to be there to take advantage of the luck. You know, he had that spin like 15 laps in. He narrowly avoided the wall and he still made it all the way up to P4. There was tons of luck behind him there, but he had to be there. He had to not spin off on the formation lap and not spin off on the first lap. He had to just save that spin on lap 15. Otherwise, he would be in the same pile as the other six drivers that DNF'd.
Yeah. Well, the luck part of it is also the fact that, you know, he could have finished the race like Ollie Bearman, but finishing with points and decent points, that'll see him through quite well through the rest of the year, I guess. Sam?
Technically, Oliver Bearman coming in 14th at the end of the race is actually a big improvement from the rest of the weekend for him.
Definitely not where anyone would have put him after quali and free practice, for sure. But on that point, 14 finishes. That's one of the lowest number of cars to finish a race for quite a while. I think the last time we saw it that low was when we had Bottas bowling in Hungary.
Oh, yeah. Bottas and Lance Stroll bowling.
Yep. That, which, again, was another wet race.
Rain always is a great equalizer, isn't it? And I can't believe 14. I mean, which year was that again? Which Hungary race was that?
Oh, last year of the old regs, which was 2022.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think.
That sounds
like
right to me.
I need to fact check you on that, but sure.
I'm hunting Wikipedia articles as we speak.
Prove me wrong, please.
No, I'm going to just trust you on this one, James. Not questioning it. I just can't believe it. You know, we've gone from basically every weekend having four Red Bulls and a couple of McLarens blowing up to barely any engine failures right now. So
the new engine regs that came in quite a few years ago. It was more than the aero regs. Yeah, certainly made it a bit different, for sure.
Yeah,
the reliability of these engines is crazy these days. Haven't seen a Ferrari on fire for a few years.
Since they fixed their... Yeah?
Can I fact check you on a technicality there, James?
Oh, come on.
So, the Sao Paulo Grand Prix last year, two didn't start.
The best
and then
kind
we
of
had
trick.
A disqualification,
correct.
Two retirements, and a WD. I don't know what a WD is. In this legend. Withdrawn. You got withdrawn. Kevin Magnussen got withdrawn.
What? Did he anyway. Get...
That's right.
So there was 16 classified drivers in Sao Paulo last year.
all right. Sao Paulo last year was chaos.
It was
a great race, another masterclass.
Glorious chaos is what it was.
Yeah. It just amazed me how good Max is in the wet. So.
And it amazed me how not good Lance Stroll was on the formation lap.
he finished in sixth. I don't know what to do with his information, but he finished in sixth.
I must be thinking... No, I was thinking Brazil last year. No, sorry, my bad. Wrong race.
Oh, okay.
I think Mark was also thinking about that race, to be fair.
I was thinking of that race too.
Yep. Wrong year. Right race, wrong year.
So where do we get to in the rundown of finishes? We've got past the initial crashes. Piastri overtaking, we went through that as well, obviously. Getting back his place that Max
took at the start. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then essentially the two McLarens just driving off into the distance.
That's something else that I noted was Lawson's pass on Ocon on lap 21. It was still so wet, and he put two tires, these two outside tires, on the grass to get the overtake done. It was the craziest thing that I think we'll probably see for a few races.
Well, I see. I mean, no one's going to deny that Lawson has talent. There's a reason he's in this series, but there's just something cursed about that second Red Bull seat.
Absolutely.
I don't know what it is. Just no one seems to be able to drive it at all.
Have you got a favorite theory on that, Mark?
I don't. I agree. I'm just thinking about if there was ever anyone that was good in that spot.
Danny Rick. Sorry.
Well, for a moment. But
if his engine didn't blow up, Danny Rick.
Yes, Webber was pretty good as well, but he was never going to be able to compete with Vettel in that you know, era where he had the backing of every single person inside of Red Bull. So,
without any evidence at all, I definitely prefer the theory that Max is just one of those drivers that is that good, you know, up there with Alonso and Hamilton and Schumacher, where they are so good that you just give them a car that is really fast, but only like in this tiny little window, this little 1% of the time window. And if you drive perfectly in that window, you win races. And if you don't, then you finish 14th every race. And that's why. The Red Bull is probably so twitchy and so difficult to drive, or so specific, that only Max can drive it to that level.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as much as you might not like the way he's won some of his world championships, or a lot of people who say it's just the car and stuff like that, you can't deny the guy, unfortunately, is a good driver.
He can drive. Yeah.
He certainly can.
He's the respect you're going to have.
We've got a few friends who have very strong opinions on his racecraft, but he certainly can drive that car.
You don't get to be Formula One driver, world champion, multi-world champion without getting your arms out. You just don't.
I'm a good driver.
I'm hoping to see Lando basically have to do that a lot this year. And if he can't, then Piastri, whoever's the more aggressive of the two is going to win this, right? And Lando seems to have the right balance between that experience and getting his arms out. And that's what's going to win him this year, if he either one of them.
I mean, how many years has Lando been in Formula One now?
Six?
This is Piastri's second season.
Yeah.
You know, he's still doing crazy well. The fact that he can even possibly challenge Lando for the world title, even just the fact that people are mentioning it as a possibility, speaks to how well he's been going.
Yeah, he's a local boy, right?
Yeah. He went to
Brighton.
Melbourne Grammar or something?
Brighton Grammar, I think it was.
Brighton Grammar, yeah.
One of the fancy private schools.
There you go. I'm assuming he's been racing. I mean, I heard he was raced in some of the tracks down at Oakley and would have raced in Sandown and a few other places. So
no doubt.
He's definitely got, and yeah, I mean, I've just watched him for the last 3 years. Didn't pay much attention to him before that. I haven't honestly followed a lot of the feeder series. Do you guys follow feeder series into Formula One much?
I do a little bit, but unfortunately the coverage of it is so lacking down here in Australia.
Timings would be horrible as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's,
it's hard
that's the biggest
to watch the races.
Yeah. That's the biggest problem we have here, right? Is our only legal option is KO, and it's $40 a month, which is ridiculous. Yeah. So what can you do?
You basically pay $40 a month and get KO. Yeah. Or $69 a month, Foxtel.
You suck it up.
And you also get F1 TV Pro. So,
I did not know.
Yeah, I was looking it up over the weekend to see what to get.
That is unfortunately, I think, tied to your TV, though, not available online.
No, I think you can get access.
Really?
Yeah, Foxtel has like an IPTV service called Foxtel One, I think. And we shouldn't be advertising for Foxtel.
No, we really shouldn't.
Edit that segment out. Unless they're sponsoring us.
They don't need it. Like, they are the only way to watch Formula One in Australia. We can't sign up for F1 TV, no matter what you try. They don't take Australian credit cards.
Yay.
So, but in New Zealand, they get F1 TV.
Time to move. They have better internet as well.
Yeah.
Carrying on with this race, I mean, we're into 37 minutes and we're not yet halfway, or are we halfway through it? I guess the race continued. I mean, like, if we look through the field at that point in time, as I was watching, I just saw that 6 second gap between Leclerc and, Russell just sit there, five and a half, 6 seconds, and I'm like, what's happening? I saw Hamilton sitting behind, was it Tsunoda? No, yeah, it was Tsunoda. For like,
yes,
1.2 seconds and just could not make a move. And I'm like, this is going to be Ferrari all season long unless something magical happens in China. They've probably had the most significant shift in their car, if I can say so without being fact-checked, because they went from pull rod to push rod, or the other way around.
I think they replaced their front suspension push rod to pull rod.
Yeah. So,
wait, they kept the rear pull rod, I believe, push rod. So they've got an interesting setup. And again, when they change the suspension, obviously it changes, or they change the front end, it changes all of the aero behind it as well. So they're definitely going to be struggling, maybe trying to find their feet for the first part of the season, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's rough to be a Ferrari fan, and ever since 21, I've been rooting for Hamilton to get his 8th Drivers' Championship. And I was like, this year, man, this year it'll be it for Ferrari and for Hamilton. And now I'm just like,
some of that Ferrari copium.
Yeah.
Mark gave you his spare supply.
Car issues, and then, you know, the engineers trying to tell Hamilton to do practice at pushing the overtake button. And not bringing them in when the rain starts for inters. It's just, it's all classic Ferrari and it hurts.
The problem is, it was so in reach for Ferrari. If they had brought them in a lap, maybe 2 laps earlier, they would have been in the prime position. And just watching Hamilton go around again and again, and you're just like, oh, the pain.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm used to this. I'm used to this at the hands of Hamilton as well, many, many, many times. So I'm a seasoned kind of professional when it comes to sucking on egg when it comes to watching a Ferrari disaster. Look, I think ultimately they do have a decent car, but they just got to figure it out.
Yeah, so, they looked great in practice. So,
I hope
look better, but
I hope for Hamilton's sake it's not a complete disaster. So, he's had a great career so far.
Sure, and I mean they must have given him some sort of promise to get him to sign with them, for sure. Like obviously Hamilton wasn't too happy where he was at Mercedes after all the issues they were having, but you know, signing up for Ferrari, who also seems to be having their issues, you know, are you trading one bad for another, or did they manage to sell him on the dream? I guess.
The dream indeed. Mission 44 is what I'd say. Over there. There's nothing else.
Yeah, definitely. That could have certainly played a part.
Yeah.
Speaking of 44, once that second lot of rain came down and Norris and Piastri both shot off on lap 44, that's when it all went into chaos, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's good. It was amazing. It was amazing that Piastri managed to get moving again.
Yeah, unfortunately, it took him way too long. I think it took him, like, pretty much the entire lap. I think Norris had lapped him by the time he got back onto the circuit, which was really painful to watch, because you knew he was just trying to get back on, because it's his home race, he wants to win, you know, he wants to do well. Wow, that one hurt.
Yeah, but credit to him, right? Credit to him to basically pull it off. A lot of people would have just basically said, this is too hard, and, you know, where am I going to go from here? I'm not going to be able to finish the race. I'm not going to get points. I think it was last season where I remember Hamilton going, oh, can I just park it? Can I just park the car? I'm coming in. So it's stuff like that where...
Yep. Showed a little of that Aussie grit.
A lot of Aussie grit. Big credit for him. So I was very impressed. I'm a big Piastri Norris fan, so I won't be disappointed at the end of the year, regardless of outcomes. It's going to make for a great season.
Oh, it will. I mean, seeing someone that is not Max Verstappen or Lewis Hamilton winning a race is going to be... winning a championship, I should say, is going to be spectacular.
Yep. This year is definitely that. I'm putting money on the McLaren boys to pull it off either by crashing into each other or somehow managing to win.
That's the other thing, right? Do we see enough of a competition between Norris and Piastri to see another Lewis Rosberg situation? You know, these two guys pretty much friends at the start of the season. By the end of it, don't want to be in the same room with each other.
Yeah, this is potentially the case. I'm not going to speculate. I'm just going to let it play out.
I think, why not? That's why we're here. Come on.
Race one. Or just it will be spicy.
All
I will enjoy.
All I'm
going
to say is papaya rules.
Oh God.
Yeah. Papaya rules.
If I never hear that term again, it'll be too soon.
Yeah. Yes, papaya rules is a bit crap. They should have fixed that last year. They didn't. This year is going to be... I'm not going to speak about this. It gets me upset. There was a period in time where all of these rules were kind of bullshit. They were called off. But I was like, why? It's a team sport here. If they're making it up, now it's...
Yeah. I mean, there's so much money on the line. You can't exclude team orders from this sport anymore.
Yeah, no. Sauber, but they somehow managed to pull off a magical place. So, yeah, maybe we'll be able
Hulkenberg
to pull this off.
Doing Hulken things.
Yeah.
This what man, the consistency is incredible. It doesn't matter if he's driving a cart with wooden wheels or a Formula One car. He'll put it in the points somehow.
He'll finish somehow for starters, but yes. Upside down
my favorite. my favorite little fun fact from this weekend is that this is the first time that Sauber has been above Ferrari in the Constructors' Championship since 2012.
Oh, man. Because, that's crazy.
You know, it's just Ferrari doing Ferrari things, and then suddenly Nico Hülkenberg is just there in a Sauber. It doesn't make any sense.
It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Do you think Audi are going to come in and say, oh, this is just because it's Audi, going to be Audi powered?
No, there's no way you could claim that. Like, if they tried, they'd get laughed out the paddock.
Yeah.
It's all right. They could try.
We all know it's Hülkenberg and purely Hülkenberg, nothing else.
Yeah.
No environmental factors or anything, just all Hülkenberg. He's just that good.
The other part of that that's great is that last year Sauber scored 4 points total for the year, and Hülkenberg got 6.
Oh, man, I love chaotic first races. You get these all these lovely stats coming out. I love it.
The favorite little fun facts from this weekend. There are now 7 drivers who started racing or are racing on the Formula One grid this year that were born after Alonso started F1.
Oh, man, that's... And yet, I think I remember them saying in the commentary, it's not the youngest Formula One grid ever. Because Hamilton and Alonso are skewing the numbers.
Heavily skewing numbers. Yeah, I think the year that Alonso wasn't racing, Alonso and Kimi, there was a year where both of them went racing.
And Hülkenberg, too. I think he's up in his high 30s at this point. So
36, 37 or something?
Something like that, yeah. He's also skewing the numbers. So as soon as those guys leave, it's going to be a young field out there, which is good to see. Nice to see, but obviously we need to find out if it's going to stay that way.
Well, it won't be that young anymore. I mean, Max, how many years has he been racing now?
10.
Significant, right, when you think about it? Still.
Yeah, and he's still 12 years old.
I mean, close enough, right? He's, what, 27? He'd have to be now?
Yeah, he's 27.
Unbelievable, that guy.
He could go for another 10 years, easy.
If he keeps his interest in the sport, you know, he could do what Lewis has done, 7, 8 titles, maybe.
Yeah, I think he will if he stays, like you said. I think he's even better than everyone else. To me, Max has got so much aggression and just skill, and he's got all the factors that you need to be a good racer, which is why sometimes it's aggravating to watch him. Because he's not racing in the team that you love. So, yeah, unfortunately for me. I reckon Max could put any car pretty close to P1 anytime.
I see, I don't know. Like, because apparently from all the way that it's been described over the years, the Red Bull drives very differently from some of the other cars. So, like, and again, it's all pure speculation at this point, right? None of us are drivers. None of us truly know what it's actually like to drive the Red Bull. But even the people commenting don't know what it's like to drive the Red Bull. But from everything everyone says, it's a very different experience. So you'd never know. Maybe he's not that good in any other car. Maybe he is. I guess we're never going to find out unless McLaren or Mercedes can woo him away from Red Bull like they've been trying to do over the offseason.
Yeah, I saw. Did you pick up on that news article where just before Piastri signed his extension,
they were apparently trying to woo Verstappen?
Everyone's going to try and woo Verstappen.
Yeah, oh, of course. That's what I was about to say. Yeah.
Can't blame him, but also, how dare they try and oust my boy a pastry?
So actually, one thing we haven't touched on before we get very far, James, what team do you officially support and have supported from a little kid?
I mean, from a little kid, it's always been Ferrari, right? They're the team from when I started watching it. Like, you know, like you said, back in 92, watching Schumacher race, and like that's when I started watching Formula One as well, was when I saw Schumacher racing and the heyday of that. I have been always a McLaren fan because I always loved their old school liveries back in the day. Bright, shiny, silver. Oh, it always looked so good on the crappy mid-90s CRT televisions that we had.
The West McLaren Mercedes with Mika Häkkinen and David Coulthard in them.
Yeah, I've also been a Williams fan for a while. I have an old-school Rothmans Jacques Villeneuve championship replica, little model sitting somewhere in my house. So, you know, I've sort of been here, there, and everywhere. But these days, I try and follow more drivers than I do teams. So I was a Danny Ric fan, in case you couldn't tell. Obviously, a Oscar Piastri fan. I do like, Kimi Antonelli, I think, is going to be an interesting one to watch for the next few years. And it's always nice to root for some of the rookies as well when they come in. We're so used to the way Red Bull treats their rookies that I don't think enough of them really get a fair chance to show us what they're actually like when they race.
Except for De Vries. He had his chance.
The sport's gone that way. The sport's definitely gone that way. It's used to be more a team thing, and now it's very much personality driven.
And again, I feel like that's also possibly the Drive to Survive impact. You know, this sport has become now so monetarily focused that teams can't take risks on younger drivers these days because it's going to cost them too much. They have to make sure they have the next Max Verstappen or next Lewis Hamilton on their teams. Otherwise, they could lose tens of millions of dollars in prize money every year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Drive to Survive has definitely created a bit of a cult of personality around some of the drivers as well. And will probably continue to for these rookies. They will probably be the first, you know, full generation of drivers that have got a big social media presence and use it a lot and gain a lot from just social media wise, just from, you know, media deals and endorsements and stuff like that, just through Drive to Survive and that cult of personality that it creates.
Yeah, I think that's the other side of it, right? We've all got that experience as a result. Every sport's facing that same thing. You've gone from just every single sport. You could see it in the NFL, the basketball, every single one's just up close and personal to your favorite player. You can't compare. When you think about what the impact of, say, Michael Jordan had to the Bulls, because the Bulls fans were Michael Jordan fans, right? And everybody that wasn't a Bulls fan absolutely hated Michael Jordan. Right?
Yep.
Right? Now, you know, people don't give a shit if somebody's a LeBron or not. Somebody's a Lando fan. If Lando moved tomorrow, they'd still be a Lando fan. I would hazard a guess.
100%.
I actually kind of have gotten over some of my ill will towards Hamilton, right? Because he's now in Ferrari. It's completely the other way around for me.
To be fair, I got over a lot of my ill will towards Hamilton when he stopped winning. You know, when someone is as dominant as Hamilton was in the Mercedes hybrid domination and as dominant as Verstappen's been in the last few years, I think it adds that extra level of they're like the bad guy. They're the boss that everyone has to defeat, right? So you start rooting for the other drivers that are challenging them.
I was actually gutted when Verstappen beat Hamilton to the first title. I as much as it would have burnt me, because Schumacher's 7 and Hamilton 7, and I'm like, that's okay, I can deal with this for a minute. I'll have to take a few days to recover. But when that happened,
the way it happened, I think, is the problem with it. Yeah. Not the fact that it happened, and let's not speak any more on this, lest we spend the next 2 hours talking about how we went motor racing. But it's not the way you want to win your first title, is have it surrounded by so much controversy and all this sort of stuff, you know? Like,
no.
Absolutely.
All right, quick fire round.
Yep.
I'll throw some things at you guys as to wrap up the results of this actual Grand Prix that we're supposed to be talking about. So we got Norris in first, as expected. No surprises there. Verstappen in second. No surprises there. Russell, P3. Very quietly great result, I think.
For sure. Big surprise. Yep. Pleasant.
Just again, consistent in the wet. That's all you need to be there sometimes. Just be there.
Yep. Kimi Antonelli goes from qualifying P16 to finishing P4, which is a wild result for a rookie in the wet.
Yep. Nearly finished P5, but I think he got his penalty overturned after the race, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Albon pulling it in P5, also a great result. That is Williams' third best race since the start of the hybrid era.
Yeah, I was going to say it's definitely up there.
Their best was a race in 2016, 12 points in 2015. This was 12 points for Albon, and then everything else was worse or nothing.
I was going to say, wasn't technically George's second or third place at the rained out Spa their best result?
Possibly.
If you count that race.
It was half points, that's the problem.
Ah, true, yes.
Yeah, so it only been would have been worth 13 points then, I think?
Something like that, yeah.
Or it was quarter points? I can't remember now.
Something like that, yeah. Something like that.
I still remember him standing on podium hugging that trophy. Oh.
I did try and fact check that stat, and I don't remember seeing that result standing out. So either I'm blind, which is very possible, or it didn't count for enough points to make the top three.
Probably didn't count for enough points.
Probably didn't. The one thing I'd say is I think the Williams are, you know, struggling now. Well, not struggling, getting the benefit of the Mike Cannon-Brooks effect.
I mean, I feel like they're getting the effect of no longer using Excel as their logistical software. Vince didn't know that the other day when I told him, by the way.
He had no idea. Jeez.
Absolutely astounding, the fact that that ever happened.
That's amazing. It's things that Excel tracks for you. Not just not just a Formula One results, but also logistical.
Imagine all the parts they lost to Excel thinking that that part was a date.
My God. That, yeah, I mean, that is truly shocking to think about.
Continue, Vince. Continue.
I just triple checked. So Max was second in 2021 at Spa in the shortened race, which means he only got 9 points for that race.
Ah, there you go. I think Russell would have come third then, right?
Yep. Good memory there.
Then we had Stroll in P6 inexplicably. He seems to somehow
Again,
do well in the wet.
Just drives a quiet race, doesn't go off the track. You typically can end up nice and high.
Yep,
get called in
it.
At the right time.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Good strategist.
Not stay out two laps too long.
Hülkenberg.
Sorry, I'll stop rubbing salt in the wound.
Hülkenberg for P7. Really good result. I actually don't know how he got there. I don't remember seeing anything about him through the whole
they
race.
They did absolutely zero coverage of his race on the broadcast that we watched. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Then we had Charles Leclerc in 8th, which was an unfortunate result for him because obviously he spun and they stayed out too long on the hards as the rain came down.
Could have been 9th.
Could have been 9th, if not for Oscar Piastri coming up behind him. It's actually pretty decent that he managed to actually get back up to P9. Yeah. We've got to give him that.
He made, whatever, 20, 16, 18 seconds in about 10 laps. That's pretty
good. Less. I think it was like
Bro
5.
Bro just locked in.
Yeah.
He channeled that rage.
I think yep. they did the safety car restart on lap 51, so there was only 5 laps left, and he made it all the way back to P9. It's kind of incredible, really.
Yep, he just went for it. Guarantee you that was like pure rage and disappointment fuel just driving yep. him along.
And then we had Hamilton in 10th, and the rest were just unremarkable, unfortunately.
Hang on, did you just say that Hamilton and Charles Leclerc were remarkable?
Unremarkable. The rest was unremarkable after Hamilton.
They weren't either.
He's saying that implies that Hamilton and Leclerc had a remarkable race, which
they had
they
a remarkably Ferrari race.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, pretty much. So next race, let's just, I mean, this was a good entry to this way of us trying to recap our Formula One weekend. The next race is this weekend, which is very, very exciting. It's at a much nicer time for us. Yes, no?
Yeah, it's not 1, 2, 3 in the morning like a lot of the European races are, and God forbid 4 or 5 in the morning for any of the American races.
Yep. Exactly. Anything in North America is horrible. But we got 2 races coming up the next 2 weekends, and we'll figure out how and when we do coverage of those. Hopefully we get a little bit more organized, a little bit better, put some structure together, and have some intros and outros and a title even.
So, oh, that'd be good. And a name. Thank you for listening to Shemozzle F1.